Welcome to Speaking of Business, conversations with Canadian innovators, entrepreneurs, and business leaders. I'm Goldie Hyder, President and CEO of the Business Council of Canada. Today I'm speaking with Sam Sebastian, CEO of Pelmarex, owner of the Weather Network. I don't know about you, but that's how I start my day every day. Pelmarex has more than 60 million users around the world with operations and services that go far beyond local weather forecasts. Sam's personal journey is a story you won't want to miss. Born in Ohio, he first made his mark in this country as head of Google Canada. You might have heard of them. Then, in 2017, he joined Pelmarex as the family-owned company's CEO. Sam has never been afraid to change things up and take big risks. We'll talk about that. We'll also explore the reasons behind his decision to apply for Canadian citizenship and how he overcame his introverted nature. I hope you'll enjoy our conversation. Sam, thank you so much for doing this.
Great to be here. Looking forward to it.
Well, let's just jump right in because I think a lot of people will ask, the company you currently work for, the name is Pelmarex.
Yeah, Pelmarex.
Tell us about it.
So it's the parent company, the holding company of the Weather Network, which most all Canadians would know, hopefully, and Metro Media in Quebec, as well as El Tiempo in Spain, Clima in Spanish-speaking Latin America. We also run and operate the backbone of the alert system for emergency alerting in the country. So it's a great business, and I've been there for 2 years and loving it.
Do you think people know that you operate the emergency system?
So we just tested wireless alerting about a year ago, and we've been managing the alert system for about probably 15 years, but only now in the last couple of years with the wireless alerting are folks starting to recognize our name associated with it, because we're waking people up in the middle of the night for Amber Alerts. Although what we love about it, because our brand is all about safety and keeping folks informed, is this is a perfect example. We woke folks up at 3 o'clock in the morning, but the two kids were identified by the police through the Amber Alert. So it's something we're extremely proud of. We've operated for the past 15, 20 years, and it's right within our DNA.
I'm sure we're going to cover a lot more ground about the reach that you have, but let's talk about the company itself. Tell us a little bit about it. It's 30 years old, has a founder.
Yeah. Pierre Morissette started the company. He actually bought the Weather Network, the television station, about 30 years ago. Pierre is an entrepreneur, but he's got great vision. He built a board, assembled a board before he even knew what he was going to do. He knew he was going to do great things when he was about 40 years old. He left investment banking and he assembled a board and then said, help me figure out what I'm going to go create. And one of his first acquisitions were some radio stations, but then the Weather Network, and it was more of a subscription service. He turned it into an advertising business and then was comfortable disrupting himself from within over the course of the following 30 years. So was very comfortable embracing digital, embracing mobile, embracing data. And even though it might put the traditional business a little bit on its heels, he knew where the business was going to continue to grow. And then over the years, we're now the third largest weather business in the world. And it's a testament to Pierre and the team that was around him.
And you've got a vision to be a global champion.
Yeah. So I think why I'm there is to take it to the next level and hopefully leave it better than when I came. It's a family business. It's a private business and is going to be in the family and remain private for years to come. And my goal is to grow it outside of Canada. So the first thing I did was set a very big ambition to be number one. That's our goal. Our goal is to be number one. However long it's going to take us, we want to be the largest weather player in the world. Our mission is to harness the value of weather to keep the world and make the world safer and smarter. And that's what we're plotting along. So we're going to go into new areas within data, within climate, within analytics, in addition to expanding internationally. So we're the largest player in Spain, in Portugal, with goals of just continuing to operate well outside of our border.
All right, let's park that thought there because there's a lot there that you said, and I want to come back to those topics. But before we go there, let's talk about, you know, your life before the role that you now have. You're an American.
Yep.
You grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and you studied accounting at Ohio State. How did you end up in Canada?
So it's been a crazy ride, but I'm the son of two teachers. So my dad was a tennis coach, a football coach, and a teacher. My mom was a teacher. And I think from the very beginning, my goal in whatever I did was to learn. And so throughout my career, I started in accounting with the goal of learning how a company works. I kind of got bored after a while, and I really wanted to go, instead of counting the numbers, actually make the numbers and learn how to grow a company. So then I moved over to the consulting side. Then I went back to school at night with a goal of just continuing to build my skills and add more kind of tools to my toolbox. When I was in grad school, everyone was leaving their traditional jobs in investment banking or Procter & Gamble and going to this thing called the web. And so I felt like I was maybe going to get left behind a little bit. So I went to a web startup, and I've been working in the internet ever since for over 20 years. I was at that web startup for about 7 years, but then had the opportunity to join a company called Google.
Heard about
8,000 employees when I started there. And
what year was that?
That was, I think, I was there for 12 years. So that was probably 17 years ago. And it was a crazy ride.
And today it's like 100,000
plus. It's 100,000 employees, yeah. So I was at Google for 8 years in the U.S. out of Chicago. And then I had the opportunity to be the country manager and run the operation in Canada about 5 years ago when we made the move. And that's what brought me here.
All right. When you talk about your interest in business, what was your role of your grandfather in that?
Yeah, great question. So my grandpa was a vice president at Nationwide, which was one of the only headquartered companies in Columbus,
insurance.
Ohio. Yeah, insurance. And he was retired, and he lived a block from our high school. And my dad was a school teacher at the high school, and so we would drive together to school every day. And then he would go and have lunch with his dad, my grandpa, and I would join him all through high school. And every day when I got to lunch, my grandfather would have an article or two from the Wall Street Journal cut out, and it was underlined in pencil with just some things for me to think about, because he knew I was kind of interested in business, but was kind of stoking that flame a little bit. And then it just took off from there. And then, you know, I'm this 16-year-old reading the Wall Street Journal every day. And then once you do that, you just get very interested in all the various different types of businesses and how they make money and which markets they reach. My dad was a tennis coach, and so he was my sports guy,
because
I was a tennis
body,
player with a football. Yeah, he was a big guy. But my grandfather was the one that got me inspired on the business side.
I hear he may have given you a book written by a current president.
Yeah, so the first business book I read, other than just the Wall Street Journal, was Art of the Deal by Donald Trump.
Who knew, eh?
Yeah, who knew?
Who knew?
Exactly. And again, that just inspired me to a certain extent as well, because I just liked I liked the combination of math and finance. And at first, I actually wanted to go move to New York City and be a stockbroker. I was a tennis player, and I played tennis at Ohio State, and I lived with all the tennis teams. So we had players from Brazil and Hungary, and then we had three guys from New York. I loved them to death, but they were nuts. And I was like, you know what? New York might not be for me. Maybe I'll go to Chicago or another big city. And so eventually when I graduated from Ohio State, I moved to Chicago. But yeah, Donald Trump and my grandpa were some early influences, strangely enough.
Now, by the way, you weren't just playing tennis. I read you were a two-time captain, Big Ten champion, and an academic All-American.
Yeah, I started playing tennis when I was 10 years old. And that was how I was going to get into school. You know, my dad was a high school teacher, so we didn't have a lot of money. So if I wanted to get an education, I was going to need to earn it and get a scholarship. So that was his job in the summers and throughout the year, was just drilling me for 2 or 3 hours on the tennis court. And I kind of fell in love with the sport. I was reasonably good at it. I worked super hard.
Still playing?
Not really.
No.
No.
Once
I started to just get busy with business and family, it just kind of dropped. And I tried to get back into it a few years ago. But once you can't hit that shot that you could when you were 19, it frustrates the heck out of you. So I pretty much hung them up.
All right. So you, 2014, you were asked to come to Canada by Google and become the managing director, country manager for all intents and purposes. Did you know very much about Canada before you made the move?
I didn't. I had been up here maybe once in my life before that, and I didn't know a soul up here. I moved with my wife and my kids. I had a 12-year-old at the time and a 10-year-old, and we were all kind of anxious and scared, frankly. I knew Google very well, and that was obviously a support system to help me kind of get through it. But no, I was kind of coming in blind. I knew a bit about the business here, and I knew I could add value, but you know, all the other part of living in a new country and a new culture, we just jumped right into.
Now, it's not uncommon to see people go both ways on the border. Do you mind if we talk a little bit about your family?
No, of course.
So you mentioned you've got two kids, a daughter and a son. Tell me about them and tell me about their reaction to moving to Canada.
So, yeah, I have a 17-year-old daughter, Sophie, and Will is 15 years old. And
he's adopted, right?
Yeah, he's adopted, yeah. We adopted
him. I want to talk
him.
About that after, but yeah, tell us
to.
About the move
I'd
over.
I'd love to. It was a great way to build our family. So I'm a bit of an introvert. I've fought that my whole life. And I say fight it only because for whatever reason, I decided to push myself out of my comfort zone a few times when I was younger. And at every time I did that, it paid off. And I got all this wealth of new experience. And it was just an unbelievable ROI, pushing myself out of my comfort zone. And that was kind of the story of every move I made in business as well, was pushing myself out my comfort zone as soon as I was getting comfortable and complacent. And the same was true when I had been at Google for 8 years and I just felt like I was starting to plateau and I wanted a new challenge. But we were hesitant in ever maybe moving because of the kids. But I was watching my 12-year-old daughter, who in many ways was at the time was just kind of like is a bit of a mini me, and she never had a huge obstacle to get through. And she too was a bit of an introvert and a bit safe and anxious. And so Kathy and I still remember when we made the decision over some wine, said there's two reasons we're going to move to Canada. Number one is it's a great job opportunity, and every time you've pushed yourself, it's paid off. But this is, it's going to pay off for Sophie. She needs this. And it's going to be hard, but she's going to get through it, and it's going to be a life-defining moment for her. Will is unbelievable, probably because he doesn't come from any of my DNA. and he just effortlessly rides through life. I am so jealous of him often. But Sophie, this was going to be a great opportunity for her to learn a life lesson. And I'll tell you what, it was the hardest thing I've ever gone through. Certainly it was the hardest thing she has ever gone through. The first 6 months, for the most part, she didn't talk to me. She didn't say, I love you for a year. And we're a very close family. But what was encouraging is lots of other women came up to me and said, I would tell the story and they would say, I went through the same thing with my dad. I punished him, but boy, it was the best decision we ever made, was that move to wherever, because it forced me to make new friends, move out of my comfort zone. And I look back on it now as a life-defining moment for me. And, you know, it's been 5 years and now Sophie's looking to stay here and go to university in Canada. And she's just so much more confident. And we were talking about what she was going to write her university essay on, and this will be the story of how this move pushed her out of her comfort zone, and the ROI has been fantastic.
And you're all applying to be Canadian citizens, I hear.
That's right. We're permanent residents now, and we'll probably be dual citizens in another year and a half.
Obviously, our listeners will need to understand this, but if they were to visit your Twitter handle, there's a picture of your beautiful family, and it's not what one would expect when you first go to your Twitter page.
Yeah.
And we talked about you adopting. Tell us the story about that.
So it's a story I'm extremely proud of and I love to talk about when people ask. So my wife and I had trouble having our first child. So we went through in vitro fertilization, et cetera, and it didn't work. And we didn't like the way it made Kathy feel. And there was all sorts of other issues associated with that. So we decided to adopt. It took us a while to get there, but we decided to adopt. So
Us a while or you a while?
Yeah, probably me more. But I got there and I actually fell in love with the concept of adoption. About a year into waiting for a child, we miraculously got pregnant and we had Sophie biologically, and it was a tough, pregnancy.
While you were in the process already.
While we were in the process, we had a dropout. Obviously we had Sophie, and on our first birthday, I think actually we started talking about number two and we said, we're going to adopt, because we just fell in love with the concept. But what was interesting is we were going to adopt a white baby because we're a white family. But the strange supply and demand economics of kids in the U.S., it would have taken us a year or more and $30,000 to adopt a baby within our race. And it was effectively free and quick if we wanted to adopt a biracial or African-American child, just again because of the various different dynamics there. And so when we got back in and decided to adopt, we said, you know what, we're not going to put any restrictions on this. And let's go into the African-American biracial program. And so we started filling out forms. Before we finished filling out the second form, we had a phone call. It said, we have a 2-day-old young boy. Are you game? Do you want to adopt him? And we need to know by the end of the day.
End of the day?
End of the day. So I still remember having this conversation with Kathy in a cab on the phone. And we both said, yeah, it's meant to be. Let's do it. And 3 days later, we had two kids, Will and Sophie. And it's the best thing that ever happened to us. And he's a remarkable kid. And it just changes your life. It changes the way you think about everything because it was different than what you imagined. But what's been unbelievable, it's so much better than we ever would have imagined. We actually were going to adopt our third child internationally from Ethiopia, but that's almost too painful a story to tell. That didn't happen for various different reasons. And so we, for the most part, live life taking signs from the universe. And that was a bit of a sign of the universe saying, you know what? The four of you are perfect. It's exactly what you need. And it was almost when we started to make that decision that I got the phone call from Google to say, hey, we think we want you to go run Canada. And that was kind of like, you know what? It's meant to be. It's a clean, fresh start. The four of us, let's move up north and make a go of it.
Well, from what I see, it's a beautiful family.
It is.
Let's talk about another area of interest to you, and that's this whole notion of leadership. I mean, you've kind of hinted at this yourself about, you know, the pattern in your career. You know, it's been every few years you leave a big established company or a role in which you're pretty well established.
Yeah.
And then you go on to something a lot more uncertain, often, you know, smaller. You were leading in these roles. How did you adjust to going from something where you had 150 people that you worked with and all of a sudden there was four in your team?
Yeah. Well, I don't have a huge ego, or at least I like not to think that I do. And so
you're an introvert, so it's probably unlikely that you have a huge ego.
And so I could kind of check any of those things at the door. And again, because primarily my goal in all of these moves was to learn, I was comfortable and I knew that if I made the investment in learning, it would pay off and the universe would bring other opportunities onto me that I'd be able to take advantage of. And that's exactly the calculus I did when I at this web startup, I had 150 people reporting to me. I was on the senior management team. I managed groups in Chicago and California. We had just acquired a company, but I knew what I was doing. I was good at it. And so I wasn't learning as much anymore. I had this opportunity after about 15 interviews to get a chance to go to Google. And there I had four people reporting to me. But to be on the ground floor at a place like Google that had just gone public, that was going to be in the center of this revolution, I pretty much expected that I was going to pick up some things over time and learn and be able to grow my career. Now, did I realize it would turn into what Google turned into? No. But again, it was just another example of putting myself out there a bit with the focus on just gaining new skills and then kind of having the self-confidence that things would work out. And at some point, I'm sure something won't work out, but you know, you're always exactly in the place where you're supposed to be. So if you live like that, then you just kind of recognize, all right, I'm supposed to learn something from this current experience. And that's kind of how I've approached both my moves as in to a certain extent leadership as well when I'm in these jobs.
I feel that in these podcasts, we often talk about the disruption that businesses are facing. But when I look at your career, and I think you've literally said this about yourself, that you've, quote, learned to disrupt myself.
Yeah.
Seems like a very deliberate strategy on your part.
Yeah.
Is that the advice you give young people today?
It comes naturally to some folks. And you have to know what your limits are. If you put yourself too far out of your comfort zone, then you lose your confidence and you just lose a bit of your stride and your edge. And so over time, I got a sense of what that limit was. Like at one point, before I was interviewing for Canada, I lost in the finals to run Australia to someone that was local in Australia from Procter & Gamble. They said, well, why don't you go over and potentially look at running China at the time? Now, we've been kicked out of China, so it's going to be a very complex thing. But both Kathy and I talked and said, listen, we're putting ourselves out there. That just might be too far for our family and for you. And I don't know about safety out there and all those kind of things because Google was kind of the enemy. Obviously there. And that's the example. I
bridge too far.
You've got to know where your limits are. But at least my personal experience is every time I put myself out there, it's paid off. And it's been that experience for my family. And so I try to impart that on folks, but everyone lives their own life and you have to know what you're comfortable with. But I'd say it for the country as well. We just have to be a bit more aggressive, a bit more ambitious, put ourselves out of our comfort zone, and I bet you it will pay off.
Right. It struck me that, you know, the sport you played was tennis and that it was as a single, not doubles, right? And it kind of fits the introvert mold that you talked about. And you described it as a sport that helps you become self-motivated.
Yeah.
What about team sports? Did you play team sports?
I did. So growing up, when you play tennis and you're a singles player, you're right, you're on an island. It's up to you. And then you get to high school and you actually start playing on a team. Now you're playing singles, but you're part of a team.
Sure.
And then when I got to university, I played on a team. I loved tennis the most when I was in high school and university, playing on a team. There was nothing like right. it.
But it's not the same as playing basketball or soccer.
It's not, but it is because you, every time I watch or listen to a player retire, they always talk about what I'll miss the most is the camaraderie with your teammates.
Correct.
And how you rely on them and the support system and playing for them. And that was what drove me those probably last 5 years of playing tennis, was not letting my teammates down and doing everything I could for them. And then the feeling when we won the Big Ten, we had won the Big Ten at Ohio State for the first time in 46 years. That was like the highlight of my sports career, but not for me individually. I went 5-0, 6-0 in the Big Ten tournament. I didn't care about that. It was the fact that we as a team for the first time in 46 years won the Big Ten. And I'll never forget that, because it was a team that had a common goal, that had clicked halfway through the season, had been through some adversity, had come back, and then we got it done. So that was great because it balanced both me being on an island and being an introvert, but then I was forced to connect with these folks that it was a life changer, because then I, right. since then in business, I've always wanted to work with teams.
Well, let's get back to your current job. You were doing great things at Google here in Canada. We first met when you were at Google. Now, you described the role of country managers as becoming one now more of sort of regulatorily focused and government relations oriented, and less about
customer.
Yeah. And then this opportunity came to you.
Yeah.
Tell us about how it came about.
Yeah. So when I moved up to Canada with Google 5 years ago, one of my, if not my first customer meeting, pitch, partnership meeting, was with Pelmarex. And I met with Pierre and we started talking and we just kind of hit it off from the very beginning. He mentioned he lived in Oakville. I said, oh, so do I. Well, what street do you live on? Elton Park. So do I. What's your number? It's this. And we're like, oh my God, we're our neighbors. And so we just built this great both professional and personal relationship that even though I had this great career at Google Canada and was there for 3.5 years, I was just watching this other company, Pelmarex, continue to build behind this unbelievable entrepreneur. And we had shared so many common values.
Was he recruiting you through this or were you just...
In hindsight, I would suggest yes. Certainly maybe after, probably a year or so, we got to know each other. But then I bet you maybe he pivoted a little bit to, hey, this might be my guy that could take us to the next level.
And remind us of the setup of the company. Like, it's pretty privately held.
Yeah, so it's a private company. Pierre is a majority shareholder, and it's a family business, and he wants it to be in the family for years to come. And he is the founder and only CEO. So, I mean, it took me a while once he did say, hey, I think I'd love for you to take this position. It took me a while to even, can I follow a founder? Can I follow the CEO? This guy is epic. He's Order of Canada. He's just been this unbelievable entrepreneur in this country. Do I even have what it takes to follow him, number one? Number two, I had to be ready to leave Google. I mean, it's arguably one of the greatest companies in the history of the world, and we were still thriving. But I had been there 12 years and I was becoming complacent. I wasn't learning as much. And so...
But seriously, any regrets?
Not one.
Not
one.
I mean, you were there at 8,000 people. It's up to 100,000 people.
I've never looked back.
Never looked back.
And I waited a while to leave because I needed to ensure that Google Canada was in a great place. The management team at Google Canada was fantastic. Sabrina, who now runs it, was my top lieutenant. And so she was ready. And so everything was there ready for me to depart. And Google obviously is such a big machine that it would do well without any individual. But the team there was in a great place. So I felt very comfortable. The merit of a great leader is how well the company does or the team does after you leave. And they've continued to thrive. But I had a little bit of time to imagine not working at Google and working somewhere else. And I got used to the fact of what opportunities I would have, what would some of the challenges be. So I think I prepared my mind for what life would be like. And then when I made the switch, and I'm this way when I do things, I just never look back because it's nothing you can control. And it, honestly, it's been that way. And I've been back into the office at Google, I think, twice. And so you get a little bit of tinge of that, right? All the nice free food and all the other benefits and this amazing people. But, you know, I can make my own fruit salad and we've got amazing people at Pelmarex. So never look back.
So what's the future? Where does it go from here?
Well, I mean, again, like I mentioned, we're the third largest weather player in the world. Our future is number one. We're primarily a business-to-consumer company. We're, I don't know if folks recognize this, but we're the third largest digital consumer network in Canada behind Google and Facebook. We have 60 million users around the world. We're the fourth largest app in the country, the ninth largest website in the country. And the beautiful thing about weather in Canada is it's this symbiotic relationship. We both need one another. And so when you build digital platforms and television platforms around the weather in Canada, it's a great business with great scale. But that's not where we want to be. We want to be all over the world. And so what's next for us is international expansion, as well as beginning to get into the B2B side of weather. Our core focus, and I always call it our iceberg, is weather. That's our core. And we have all of this opportunity to uncover under the water on this massive iceberg about new businesses we can build outside of the core from weather. And that's what we're in the process of doing. So whether it's new data businesses we're launching, new climate businesses we might launch, that will be the future. And you'd be amazed at the types of decisions that are impacted by what's going on in the environment and outside. And right now, we mostly tell a B2C story, but businesses and how they sell and what they sell are dramatically influenced by weather. And if we can give them the insights to make better decisions based on that, there's a business there.
When you were telling me earlier when we were having lunch that, you know, this is literally a new vertical for you to be able to go to retail stores and say, this weather pattern creates this outcome in your store in terms of supply and demand for your food products, for your...
We're building a platform where you can give us your sales data by location, by SKU, by service line. We will take our weather data, and this is what we specialize in at a very local level, and we'll build an algorithm that shows the tendency.
When it rains.
Exactly. When it rains, you sell more Frosties or what have you. But our core product, what we do best, and we have 50 meteorologists in the company who do this and they're phenomenal, is we give a 7-day forecast. And we're the best in the business at this, especially in Canada and Spain, where we
primarily operate. You better be. I'll look at you five times a day as
exactly.
a minimum.
Well, I told you, maybe we got Ottawa wrong today. I'm not sure. So businesses don't care what happened in the past. They want to know what happened in the future. So if we know what the correlation between product sales is to the weather, and we know what the weather is going to be over the next 7 days, and we've built a platform that puts all this information together, a business person who runs a restaurant in this particular location.
Or even better, a hot dog vendor on the street knows when to stack up on hot dogs.
So then you know what your inventory levels potentially could be, what your staffing conditions might potentially be 3 days out. Huge opportunity for us if we do it right, and we will. And what's beautiful is we have a time horizon. We're not a public company. We don't have all of the pressures of a short-term time
quarterly
horizon.
Reporting.
we have a founder, and that's the reason I'm there, an entrepreneur who is incredibly visionary, extremely growth-minded,
and
but also
thinker.
Patient.
Very long-term
also
thinker.
Also patient. So we can build these businesses over time. And if a few other folks fail, maybe we acquire one of those over time and continue to build up our capabilities and become number one.
Now, this, of course, raises an issue that's being widely discussed these days, right? About data, about privacy, about mischief within the use of data and privacy. Where do you fall on all of that? Because it's complicated, isn't it?
It's complicated, but in some ways, it's super simple. The biggest asset we have at the company is our 60 million users. You are on our app 3 times a day. Our average user comes to our app 21 and a half times a month. So that's a deep relationship with our users. If we violate that trust, we're toast. We have no business. And so as we launch new products that are based on data, based on usage patterns, based on location, lots of other things that we could build great businesses on, but also rely on our user, we have to be transparent. We have to be open. We have to give them choice. We have to offer up lots of permissions on where they can opt in and opt out. We have to be crystal clear. So if you go to our privacy policy, we try to cap it at a certain number of words so that you don't wind up with
English?
It's in English and French.
Is it legal gobbledygook?
No, it is very straightforward, very folksy, very Columbus, Ohio. let's put it that way, where we just tell folks exactly, here's what we're doing and why we're doing it. And if you don't like what we're doing, this is what how you can respond. In many ways, it's simple and it's fundamental. That's a core value, is that user trust and creating a win-win environment with our user. So now the pressure we have is we have to build great products that protect that value exchange. So we will ask users for their location, but we ask users for their location because we build great products to deliver a dedicated forecast when you're traveling all over the country. And then we ask you, is it okay if we use some of your location information while you're traveling? Because we can build some interesting products like that, both for businesses, but as well as making our products better for you as a user. If you're not comfortable with that, then opt out. But that's how we try to operate. We're in the process of being certified privacy by design by KPMG because we're trying to put privacy processes into everything that we do when we build our products. And we actually have an opportunity to lead here. So yes, it could be a challenge. It could be an obstacle. It could be a threat. But if you turn it just slightly on edge, it can also be an opportunity to lead in this country and amongst our cohort and do it the right way and create some distance from the competition.
I think we can talk a lot about data, but why don't we talk about another thing that obviously comes up when you're talking about the weather, and that is the issue of climate change. What are you doing about that?
It's a big opportunity. We talk about now, we say we're a weather and climate company because that's where we want to go. Now, we have lots of responsibility to build great products around that. But again, we're right now a B2C company where we tell great stories and we translate the science of weather to all of our users around the world. We will do that for climate. We've already begun to do that. We'll do much more of it. I'm back here in Ottawa talking to some folks next week about how we can continue to do more of that. We're great storytellers, but we're scientists in the end. So we will explain the facts. We're not going to take a political stance. We will simply lead with, here are the facts about climate change. And we're credible because we're in this business. It's on our iceberg, perhaps a melting iceberg. I might want to use a different metaphor. So there's great opportunities in storytelling. But I think there's bigger opportunities on the B2B side, meaning we can go to banks, insurance companies over time, and all sorts of other organizations and boards and explain to them the risk that climate change and environmental change will have on their business over time. And I think we've got the right brand, where we have the right talent. We just have to build the right products.
Let's talk a little more about you as a person and as a leader. Tell us how you learn.
By rolling up my sleeves and kind of jumping in for the most part. And through listening. So an example, my first 2 years in now as CEO, I had some great friends who said, you never get your first 90 days back as a CEO. So don't waste them. It's a massive learning opportunity. So the company was in great shape. We were doing very well. We were growing. We needed to grow faster, but we were growing. So I didn't have to go in and turn something around or change it. So I took my time. And for the first 3 months that I was there, I talked to everyone in the organization, every single person across all four of our offices around the world, and listened. And I have a binder that I still look at of all of those interview notes. And I'm constantly going back because we have folks at the organization who have been there 30 years. And their Christmas morning is when there's active weather outside and it's miserable in Southern Ontario. That's when the walls come alive at our place. And so there's a passion and an intelligence level and a level of expertise at the company that here comes this new guy. I don't know anything about the weather. And now I'm going to set a new vision and run the company. There's no way I'll be successful unless I'm capturing the essence and the passion and the intelligence of all of our employees. And so I wanted to roll up my sleeves to kind of jump in, but I certainly wasn't going to make a lot of decisions early on because I had no right to. I really didn't have any credibility and it wasn't grounded in anything. And then after 3 or 4 months, I gathered the senior management team. I talked to Pierre every Friday morning and I said, listen, this is where I think we need to go. I think we need to build a weather B2B business. I think we have to have bigger ambitions. We have to be number one. I think we have to focus more on international.
What did he say to that?
This is an entrepreneur like Larry and Sergey at Google who just want to grow and change the world. So he was like, all right, let's do it. Great. Again, that was the reason I went there because I wanted to learn and work with an entrepreneur who was growth minded, who wasn't just going to rest on the laurels of this great company that he had built.
But you brought a different style to it. I mean, I have not met Pierre, so I shouldn't generalize,
yeah.
But my sense is This was a guy who knew exactly what he wanted to do, and he was going to do it. Everybody was going to be pulled along for the ride.
Right.
But you're not that guy.
I'm not. I've never been that guy, and I certainly couldn't be that guy in this company because I didn't have the context. I didn't know exactly what to do. So the approach I took, and an example I use is I got Pierre's office when I started. This beautiful corner office, private bathroom, and I've never had anything like that. I got so uncomfortable in that office because no one would ever come talk to me. I had no interaction with the rest of the company. And so about 3 months in, I moved out of the office and I moved to a cube for 2 weeks all around the company. I would live in a different cube for 2 weeks to get to know folks, to hear from them, to understand what was working, what wasn't. And then I built a plan that we collectively, all of our employees, could get behind as well as execute. It's more steward leadership, right? That's what I'm just more comfortable with. That's kind of what I grew up with. That's what I learned. And I do think that it sticks longer.
You said you meet with Pierre quite regularly. You ever had this type of a conversation with him about leadership? And
yeah. Although we had that conversation when he was probably unbeknownst to me interviewing me 2 years before I took the job. And it was mostly around, so tell me, you know, what's your background? How'd you grow up? Oh, you talk to your grandpa a lot. So how do you manage at Google? What are things like there? Like he knew what he was getting when I got there.
Yeah, you were set up beautifully, weren't you?
I was. He's a master.
Game, set, match.
Exactly. So we still talk about it now, but he, you know, he watches it. So for whatever reason, we
have you gone to him and said, I'm struggling with something?
Oh, I mean, again, the only reason I have any chance of success in this job is because I can connect with Pierre on a weekly basis. He did the job for 30 years. Right. He's got great vision. He's given me the keys and he's totally stepped away. And, you know, I'd be a fool if I didn't leverage his expertise as well as keep him informed. This is his company, his baby. I need to make sure he feels comfortable with what I'm doing. I learn a lot from him. I ask questions. And then he also sees how I manage. I do things quite differently. I sit in a cube versus a big corner office. That's one. But he knows that I'll still get results. I'll still get the job done and I will engage and hopefully inspire and retain a whole new set of employees that we need to attract in order to build technology and AI platforms. You know, that requires a whole new skill set that if I can build the environment that would attract and retain those types of employees, then we can deliver that vision that we're, you know, that we're after.
You know, just listening to you, Sam, and just having read about you, there's such a dichotomy there. You know, you're an American, you know, now a proud Canadian, someone who's, you know, working with people that are very different than you, including your boss in Pierre.
That's right.
How do you explain that?
So I grew up in a pretty similar community. So we all look the same, Upper Arlington in Columbus, Ohio. And so it wasn't until I got to Chicago outside of university that I discovered that, oh, not everyone was white and from the middle class. And it was kind of a revelation and it was freeing and I loved it. And I love being home. I love going home. I was just at our 30th high school reunion and we have some great people there, but I always resisted going back there because it felt too similar and too much of the same. And like, you wouldn't learn. Again, it comes back to learning. When I was in Chicago and we lived in the city, you have all of humanity coming at you. You can't help but learn about different cultures, how to get along with different people, how to manage life in a different way. And so that, again, had such a great payoff when I was in Chicago that from that point on, I was comfortable with things being a little bit different or foreign in my life. Because I knew that I'd probably learn something from it and there'd be payoff on the other side. And again, it's played out positively for me. And now that I've got kids, that's what we try to talk about all the time. And it's what's been beautiful about the lesson moving to Canada and being in the Toronto area is the concept of the mosaic here and how it is beautiful, and this is a country of a great experiment to see, can all these different people get along and work in an environment? It may not work, but the lessons that we'll learn by kind of putting yourself out there and being comfortable with lots of different things coming at you is invaluable, and you'd be a fool not to want to run through that experiment.
Anything keeping you up at night these days?
Teenagers. You know, I sleep like a baby for work for the most part because
been there,
you know,
done that. By the way,
yeah, it's not rocket. I mean, I'm not saving lives. We're operating a weather business, and I'm very proud of it. And we have lots of work ahead of us. But you know, ultimately, what keeps me up at night is: am I parenting my kids in the right way? Am I spoiling them too much? Am I not giving them enough challenge? Am I directing them in the right way, but not overlording them? And so, luckily, I've got the best wife in the world, and so we're constantly talking and debating how we do it together. But that's what keeps me up at night. Am I being good for them and providing what they need to live the, you know, a great career and opportunity in life that I've had the opportunity to?
And what about work-life balance? How do you make it work?
I don't make it work. I'm not great at it. It's a battle. I don't necessarily believe in balance. I believe in ebbs and flows. So, like, this is a great example. My first 2 years at Google Canada, I worked way too much. I hit a wall. I recognize, okay, I got to balance things out a little bit more. But I wasn't going to be successful unless I went really all in those first 2 years. And Kathy and the kids had tons that they needed to do at school and everything else. So it was the perfect kind of ebb for me to go deep. Same thing at Pelmarex my first year and a half. I've now hit a bit of a wall. Now I've got to make sure that I've got the right balance, got the right exercise. I'm meditating, I'm sleeping. So it's, you know, it just ebbs and flows, and you got to make sure that you've always got the right, the balls in the air and that it doesn't drop. But I'm certainly not perfect at it. It's a battle.
You know, I have to ask the one thing I think that unites parents around the world, and how could I not have thought of asking you this earlier? How do you deal with social media in your house?
We let it go. So now remember, I worked at Google for 12 years.
That's why I'm asking.
Right. And so,
is there a button I need to know about that I don't know about?
No, if we haven't instilled the values in our kids by the time they're 12 and start using social media, we screwed up the first 12 years. So we watch it and we try to understand if they're developing new parts of their personality based on being on a phone or social media. But if we try to squash it there, they're going to find it somewhere else. And what's always worked for Kathy and I is an open communication at home. We constantly want the kids to talk to us, to be as truthful with us as possible. We'll try not to use it against them. We just are directing them in the right direction. But at this point, they're 17, they're 15. Kathy's dad had 30 grandkids, and he always said, your job's done when they're about 11 or 12. You just have to make sure they have friends of the right ilk and they're with the right groups. But other than that, you've done your job. Just kind of keep an eye on them, but let them live life. That was kind of been our philosophy with social media. And I don't know, hopefully it's played out pretty well so far.
Now, the question I think everybody wants to know the answer to is Borg or McEnroe?
So this is interesting. Borg was my idol when I was young until he lost to McEnroe. And so my dad and I...
You're not a fair weather friend, are you?
No, but what I didn't like about Borg was he retired after that. And I felt like he gave up. And so it's an unbelievable Borg fan. He did everything right. He carried himself in the right way. My dad and I would watch all the Wimbledon finals. He was an introvert.
Grace,
he fought through it. And he suppressed some things. But McEnroe wore his emotion on his sleeve. He fought like hell.
Passionate.
He never gave up. He was passionate. Sure, he went over the line many times, but
he was real.
He was real and authentic. And I always...
My bias is starting the show here,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. And so he became my idol. And I had McEnroe posters even at university.
So you're a fighter.
Yeah. I try to be. You have to be these days.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. And
it was a pleasure. Thank you for doing
it with us. Now, as you well know, as an avid listener, we like to end the segment with a bit of a word game. And just to kind of warm you up, I thought I'd ask just to start off, like, what's the one word that describes you?
Authentic.
All right. Let's get to the word game. Sports.
Drama.
Interesting answer. Leadership.
Critical.
Now, remember, you can't say the same word twice. Too many people do this. So when I ask the next few here, pay attention. Disruption.
Everywhere.
Data.
Complicated.
Adoption.
Life-changing.
Family.
Home.
Kathy.
Best friend.
Canada.
New home.
Thanks for doing this, Sam. Really appreciate it. You were great.
Loved it. Thank you.
Thanks again to Sam Sebastian for being my guest on this episode of Speaking of Business. Subscribe now for more conversations with Canada's top innovators, entrepreneurs, and business leaders. Search Speaking of Business wherever you find podcasts or visit speakingofbiz.ca, that's biz with a Z, to join our email list and follow us on social media. Until next time, I'm Goldie Hyder.